Welcome to Big Innings, America's cricket podcast. It's been 10 days since our last show. Here we are for the week of April 29. So much has happened. Amin, we've been waiting for the USA and Canada team announcements for the World Cup. They're due on Wednesday. I bet once we publish this podcast, they'll be announced immediately.
Yeah, it just seems to be the way it goes. We waited last week to try to see if we can get the USA teams in there, and they said, we'll take our time, which is unfortunate. I'm ready to know these teams. I know a couple teams have started to release, but you know what? We got to talk USA cricket anyway, and we know we at least have something to speculate about. And I think me and you, we're similar in the fact that we love speculation.
Oh, yeah, we do. We like the firm stuff, too, though. We like good news more than anything else, and I'm going to lead off with that before we get into the rest of the show. I want to talk right now about the Seattle Orcas and what they've been doing. We've seen Shiel and Brian Lemon recently popped up at a brewery pub called Ruben's Brews, and they introduced some of the patrons there to cricket bowling and even clocked their bowling speeds. Some of them had actually pretty good figures for first-timers. There was one guy in the upper 70s, which is pretty interesting. That guy had to be like a pro baseball player or something, or at least high-level college or something. And I'm sure he chucked, but that's okay right now. But yeah, that's great for newcomers. I've always felt like the best way to learn the game is to play the game. So it's nice when you're demonstrating cricket to let people give it a try.
No, 100%. I like the initiative from the Orcas. I thought that's something they've been really good about, is including the community and trying to be one with the community. And I think they do it really well. I think the Unicorns do it pretty well. They usually have watch parties and launch of kickoff events and stuff like that. But I like the aspect of getting people involved. And like you mentioned, the easiest way to learn any game is just to play it. I think that's why pickleball blew up, is because it was like, let's just come out here and play it. It's tennis, but it's a little different. And people just start playing it. And I have friends who play it and now are hooked, and they'll be there for 3 hours. I can't get them to do 3 hours of anything, but I can get them to play 3 hours of pickleball or something. So anytime you can get somebody out there and doing an activity, it's going to make them resonate with it more. And I think that's what the Orcas have done. And again, I think anytime one of these major league teams is willing to, you know, put their hand into the community and do something like this, I'm all for it. I think it's super cool.
They are canvassing now for net bowlers for the 2024 season. Anybody out there, if you're young, if you're a bowler, if you're a promising bowler, let's say you were a USA U19 player or you're a standout minor league cricketer, and you want to gig as a net bowler this summer, get in touch with the Seattle Orcas. Try out to be a net bowler. It's also a great way for them to scout for the future drafts. I think that they've done a good job with the draft. They're one of the three top teams, in my opinion, at drafting domestically. And this is going to give them a little bit of an edge. And obviously, the ownership group here is also heavily involved in minor league cricket. The people who manage the team are involved with the Seattle Thunderbolts. We have here a really cool situation in Seattle where you have a minor league team and a major league team with a pretty close affiliation. And we can get an idea now of what that type of affiliation would look like, what type of a minor league cricket and major league cricket affiliation could look like. But yeah, go out, try out with them as a net bowler. You might get a gig on the Seattle minor league team. You might get a gig as a net bowler for Seattle, and you might get drafted next year. That's cool. I think that's a really great initiative.
Yeah, no, it is. I know they carried around Ahuasi last year. He was someone who was a young kid from Texas, and they brought him up there. He's a really promising young bat. When they brought him up there, he got to learn and hang out with guys like Quinn DeCock and everything. We would talk about it all the time. And he was staying at the Adolphus, a 5-star hotel, and just around the team, helping the team, whatever they need. So it's a good way to not only, like you said, get reps, but you get to interact with a lot of these really high profile cricketers, pick their brains. There's nothing like being around the best minds in the world, best players in the world, and understanding what they do. I think it's a great initiative from the Orcas to try to get some young kids involved. And I think for these young kids, yeah, this is a great opportunity. I don't know what your summer internship or job is lined up, but if you have an opportunity to be free in around July, June, July, this is a great thing to do because, hey, not only are you going to be able to hang out with some of the best players in the world in some great venues, now you get to hang out in front of scouts and both for major and minor league cricket. And you know what? Maybe you get your name called for one of those two drafts that happen every year. Again, if you're a young kid who's looking to try to make a name for himself, this is a great way to do it.
Especially if you're a U23, you want to go in that U23 slot in the future. This is a good chance to get exposure with one of the teams. I'd love to see another U23 slot on these major league teams, and then you have to keep one every year. I'd love to see that sort of
thing. I like that.
Yeah. But yeah, also the World Cup trophy is going to be in Seattle this weekend, and we're hearing that there's going to be some pretty big names in the world of cricket out there with the World Cup trophy. So if you're in the Seattle area, head out to that and definitely go see the World Cup trophy. Go see the Seattle Orcas who are going to be around. And maybe, do they have a mascot costume yet for York the Orca?
No, I don't think they didn't get a York of the Orca out there. I think that's something you got to pitch Jug on, though. I think if you were to get, say, hey, great way to get crowd involved and get a York of the Orca, I think that's a way to, or at least they should throw like the little orcas around or something. I think they got to get some little things that people could take home for its York of the Orca.
Best named mascot, by the way. Best name for a mascot.
I wonder who came up with that name, Nate.
Yeah, it's an American-born name. Sounds Australian. But all right, so that's pretty much, that's some good news for the week. Moving on, we're going to get into some Canada selection shenanigans, so hold on for that. We're going to talk a little bit about USA cricket selection, what we're hearing about that. But let's first address this women's team in the World Cup. We need to have an episode dedicated to this tournament, to the World Cup qualifiers tournament here shortly. But the USA have really not come through so far in this qualifier, losing their first two games. They've got only two more to go in this group. The groups are groups of five. The top two teams advance to the semifinal in each group, and then the two finalists advance to the World Cup itself. They would have to pull off an absolute miracle to just even be number two in their group. They would have to win out and make up about a three-run net run rate difference between themselves and the current second place Scotland, and that's not very likely. What it looks like is going to happen is we might see a showdown here between Thailand and Scotland at the end of this group stage, which looks very interesting. But from a USA perspective, things could have gone a lot better so far.
Yeah, absolutely could have. I don't think we've quite fired on really all cylinders at any point in time. I thought with the bat, it's been lackluster. I don't think we've had that real start or real push that we're looking for. The Scotland game, your top three combined for three runs. That's not a great way. Your top four actually combined for three runs with three ducks involved. It's just a tough way to go. And in that game, Aditya Jayasurya got promoted. But I just think that there's a way to go in the batting front. And it feels pretty similar to what you, me, and Peter were talking about after the Nationals, right? How there is that, okay, we can see the improvement of these girls are starting to play with a little bit more maturity and responsibility, but there's still that lack of intent or maybe the situation of, hey, they don't bat up top the order when they play in the boys teams back home or something like that. So I think there's still ways to go with that. I know Charlotte Dickinson's been working hard with them. I got to hear a little bit of her chat with Peter after the loss. And again, she really liked Sanvi Ahmadi, but I think that was probably the biggest standout. She's a 15-year-old leg spinner who debuted, and that's cool to always see. I like Ahmadi's game. I like what she can bring. And I think anytime you get a leg spinner involved, it's going to be fun. She's not the type of bowler who just like loops it straight up into the air, which is exciting. She's got a little bit of that flatter T20 style bowling. But like I said, I think that this is, we knew this was going to be a work in progress. We just got ODI status. This was never going to be an overnight, we're going to qualify, we're going to move on. And they're going to have to learn, which you're talking about a lot of 15 to 19-year-old women who are out there playing in the UAE, maybe for the first time ever against international opponents. So again, it's baby steps. Do I think that the batting is probably, to me, still the biggest point of concern? Absolutely. But I think they'll get better as we just continue to see them play more cricket.
Yeah, and we've seen some good stuff from Asani Bekele here in both of the games she's performed. She's probably been the most consistent performer here as far as numbers go for USA thus far. Batting here, obviously, it's funny. We said last time that these batters at the tail, wow, these ladies are better than a number 8 or a number 9 or a number 10 batter, and it's still the same. It's still the case. You have so many good players in this team, but Asani Bekele batting basically at number 8 here, it looks like, in the second game. That's something else. Scoring 30 off of 26, the standout batter. Obviously, she also had the best bowling numbers for the team in the Scotland game. But yeah, we did see them face Scotland in the 50 overs recently, and here we are in the T20 qualifier here also falling to them. Yeah. We've got coming up, we've got USA versus Thailand. This is going to be interesting game. I love watching Thailand play. I love the way that they play. This is a team I think they can learn a lot from. I think that they have to go into this game. They're going to have to go into this game with a lot of energy, with a lot of team mindset, a lot of teamwork, and just on a high note and stay that way, because Thailand's going to play that way the entire time. Thailand is going to be a high energy team that's going to hustle. They're going to make plays in the field. You have to be on your toes against that team. And then of course finishing off on Friday against Sri Lanka, that's going to be a tough one. So hopefully they learn something between now and then.
Yeah, I think they're going to have to pick Thailand's brains about what went wrong against Sri Lanka for Thailand, because Thailand was bowled out for 55, all out in 16.2 overs against Sri Lanka. So there's a tall task on our hands. What I like about the Thailand game is that it's the Thai game. It's not crazy ahead of where we are, in the sense of they're not a team that's incredibly explosive with the bat. They all bat around the 100 mark to, you know, about 70 to 100. That's where your strike rates are going to see for most of that order. And I think that's something that, okay, this is a good opportunity for our women to play their style of play, because we talked about those strike rates just aren't T20 strike rates. They're more ODI strike rates, but they don't bat for that long a time anyway. So they're just in that in-between spot where they're still developing that ability to get boundaries with ease. What you can do against the Thai is that, okay, they're not going to hit boundaries galore, right? This is also a single double team, a running team that finds the odd occasional boundary. So this would be a good test of two teams, I think, that are pretty similar. And like you mentioned, the one thing that sets this Thailand team apart is that they are always high energy. It doesn't matter what happened the game before. They're going to come back and do their thing. We talked about them getting bowled out for 55. They come back the next match and they bowl out Uganda for 62, right? They can give it right back. Thailand is a tough team. They're feisty, but I don't think there is this massive gap between where we are in our T20 game and where Thailand is in their T20 game.
What they do have over us is the kind of an understanding that they're not gonna fail, I think, because of lack of intent. They're not gonna fail because of a mental mistakes. And they've been here before. They've been around the World Cup before. They have a lot of experience on that team, and I think that's where they have a leg up for sure. In fact, I'll say that if we do beat them, it would be just as surprising as seeing Vanuatu beat Zimbabwe, which we just saw.
Yeah, I don't even with that gap not being huge, I don't expect just to beat them. I just think it gives us the best opportunity to compare ourselves with the team, because I think with Scotland, you see the brute power that they have, and it doesn't feel like we have that yet. I think with Thailand, you can almost – there's so much to learn, because there's a savviness. Like you said, they've been around the block. They understand how to – keep themselves in games. And I think for us, with a lot of really young kids, it's a great way to learn of, okay, look, we might not be Scotland hitting sixes down the ground, but we can be Thailand and steal games here and there and win with just how smart we are.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting. I'm obviously saying Sri Lanka looks like the favorites for the entire tournament. Ireland ahead right now with 4 points in the B group, with Netherlands just behind them. Those two look like they're going to go through, considering the fact that UAE and Zimbabwe have both played three and have the same amount of points as Netherlands. But yeah, right now it's looking like it's going to be Sri Lanka. And then it's going to come down to Scotland versus Thailand. Now, hopefully,
yeah,
by the time, you know, in a couple of days' time here, USA has beaten Thailand and we're celebrating a big upset, and I'm looking like an idiot for saying that it would be a big deal if it would be a huge deal if they beat them. I still think it would be a big deal. But this is not the way a lot of people think. A lot of people think, oh, yeah, you got to beat a full member to have a major upset. To me, this would be a huge upset if they beat Thailand, especially as Thailand has gotten some momentum with their big win over Uganda, who beat USA the other day. A couple of days ago. We'll try to do an episode about that when it's all summed up. But that brings us to some really strange things happening with Canada. It's tough, and it's tough to keep on top of everything that goes on in the USA in general. And then now to be hearing all these things about Canada. And just as we were about to record last week, there was a lot of hubbub about things happening in Canada, and I wanted to catch up on those. So we weren't able to record our episode last week because of that. Because of this, there are accusations here. A Vancouverite named Bobbitt has accused Canada's president, Amjad Bajwa, of being appointed, even though the nominating committee recommended against it. The board itself overruled it and voted for that. And let's listen to this little clip here that kind of catches you up on what the accusation is. This was from a Zoom meeting from some folks who follow Canadian cricket very closely. And let's take a listen here.
Mr. Amjad Bajwa filled up a nomination form like every candidate is supposed to fill a nomination form. And there is a very important aspect of a nomination form is that every candidate is supposed to make a declaration. And what is that declaration and undertaking about? That I, XYZ, have never been convicted either in Canada or anywhere in the world of any criminal or civil conviction. So in layman terms, what would that mean? That I've never been convicted in any civil or criminal matter. But that was not the case with Mr. Amjad Bajwa. He is a very known litigant. So evidence was provided to the nomination committee of Cricket Canada. Mr. Bajwa has been involved in some odd 26 lawsuits. Now, that's a huge number.
But how can you say that?
It's fine. People get involved in lawsuits. It's not a big deal. But what is a big deal that this gentleman has been convicted?
Did you provide and it all, as well?
Oh, yeah. All the evidence was provided. And so he has been convicted of what? He has been convicted of financial malpractices. What does that mean? That he is not a very financially prudent person. That means he has not conducted his business.
Bajit, I must warn you that this is a very serious allegation you are putting on the social media. And I hope you have all the concrete evidence of what you are talking about.
So now the icing on the cake is left. Wait for it. The nomination committee got all the information. They reviewed everything. So there were three very respectable people who were in charge of the nomination committee. And there was a unanimous decision. And the decision was that Mr. Amjad Bajwa's candidature should be rejected. But then what happens? So once the nomination committee holds your nomination as invalid, that's it. You're gone. In fact, not only this year nomination was invalid, his last year nomination was also invalid. Then what do they do? The board overrules the nomination committee. And to my utter shock, there is no provision in the bylaws for the board of directors to set aside a decision of the nomination committee. So who are we dealing with here? So the only one word comes to my mind is goons. They are first class goons who are so hungry for power, and I don't know what power. They're so hungry for these positions that they'll go to any extent. So then we don't call them a lobby anymore, because lobby is a very respectable word. You know, there are lobbies which do very good things too. Every lobby is not bad. So the word for them would be what? They are a gang. They are nothing short of a mafia gang. This is how they work. So not only they manipulate elections, and this is not the first time they have done it.
And that's saying that when he filed the nomination, in application, there is a provision to declare that was there any criminal or civil matter against him, right?
And matter against him. Whether you have been held means you have lost a case, there's a conviction against you, you have lost a civil matter. And in case of Mr. Amjad Bajwa, not only he lost the matter, these matters were of financial matters. Now you are claiming to be part of a non-profit, and your financial conduct has been very poor.
But despite all the evidence provided, right? Nomination committee also rejected his nomination. Still, he was cleared off?
Yeah, by the board of directors. The board of directors overruled the nomination committee And they could not have done that because there is no provision in the bylaws.
That was Bobjit Jahar talking to Dilak Khan, Devesh Shankar, and Amit Thamrakar. The fellow who was pushing back a little bit, saying these are serious accusations, that was Devesh Shankar. So that's on the appointment of the new president for Canada, who was most recently the vice president of Cricket Canada. But yeah, the accusation there is pretty clear that the nominating committee advised against the appointment of Amjad Bajwa and advised against it when he was appointed as the vice president. But it was overruled apparently by the board itself. And Bobjit Jahar is saying here that there is no mechanism to allow that to happen, that this is just a violation of their constitution, basically, essentially. Now, that's one thing that's interesting, and we'll follow and we're going to investigate that obviously and see how that turns out. But I did email Canada asking some questions about the things I'm hearing about their selection, and I'll read you my email to Canada. I've not heard back from them, obviously. Number one, with the 2024 World Cup selection on the horizon, why has Canada Cricket decided to change their requirements for selector eligibility? As we understand it, the prior standard has been replaced with the requirement that the selector have played only first-class cricket for any ICC-approved member. The former policy was that if you wanted to be a selector, you had to have either represented Canada or another team internationally. Number two, the second question I ask here is, considering the great success of Coach Pubidu, who has now taken three associate member teams to ODI status, why has the composition of the selection committee changed to exclude Pubidu as a decision maker in the selection process? The former composition of the selection committee was two selectors plus the coach. And according to, I believe, Pubidu's contract also says that he has to be involved as a selector itself, officially. Now, from what I've heard, the new selection team is basically three selectors, and Pubidu is an observer. He is not involved in the selection. So it looks like somebody's trying to force Pubidu out of making selection decisions. And Amin, both you and I know Coach Pubidu. That's not something that he's going to be very happy with. We know that. In the past, he's left over situations like that. He's left his coaching assignments over situations such as that. And then the third question I ask is, what is the reason for the absence of Kaleem Sana and Jeremy Gordon, two of Canada's best fast bowlers from the recently concluded USC series, and will they be included in the World Cup squad? Now, also, Amar Khalid was also not involved in the USA versus Canada series, but as I understood it, it was because of a family emergency situation. Now, I've since come to find out Jeremy Gordon, I believe, was apparently dismissed due to some kind of a disciplinary issue or something like that. Now, I don't know.
Yeah, that's what Smith was saying last time.
Yeah, that's what Smith said last time. That's right. I've come to find out that Kaleem Sana was, he missed because he didn't have a visa situation sorted out for to be in the USA. But what we're hearing now about the selection from Canada is that Nikhil Dutta is out, Shermont Wadjirani is out, Jeremy Gordon and Amar Khalid are both dropped from the T20 World Cup squads. And we're seeing here also that supposedly, now this is based on a tweet that I've seen, and asking around, I've heard that these things are true. But it doesn't make sense to me to cut Khalid and Gordon out as fast bowlers, both of them out, when we saw against USA, that was really a weakness that they had in that those four games versus USA. A weakness that they had was fast bowling.
Yeah, no, I agree. There's clearly something going. Some things don't add up. It's kind of USA cricket-esque almost. Things just not adding up. Not something Pubidu, there's just no, you just know he's not behind this decision. There's no way he would have gone with this decision. That's, I think, why he's out, or at least it seems as if he's out for these reasons of this disagreement of should Gordon and company be going. It is interesting because their pace attack wasn't as good as it had been. I think had Gordon and company been there, it's a very different Canada team, and you're creating some more pressure for Monik Patel because he's not walking down and hitting your bowlers straight back. Now you have Jeremy Gordon coming in there who's going to rifle one of the bouncers at him, and it's a little bit quicker than anyone else you got coming. So those are very interesting decisions. Again, the Smith Patel saying Gordon was disciplinary. I'd be interested to see what that is and to see their official reasoning behind those things. But there are a lot of questions now that are left to be answered.
Yeah, yeah, lots of questions here. I just don't understand why on earth, if you want to perform well, why you're going to – how many times does Pubidou have to lead a team to ODI status? And then as soon as he gets there, he gets the reins taken out of his hands when he's the one that he's been trusted with getting you there. He's gotten you there. And now that there's money to be had or there's more budget to be had and that people want to overrule him. They want to get their people in, is what it looks like to me. It looks like somebody wants to get their people in. We know that if you play in a World Cup, you get paid. You get paid by the ICC. Players that play in the World Cup get money to be there. And that's a good thing. We want that to be, we want that to happen. But that also makes for a political decision sometimes. People want their buddies in. And I think some of it is, people kind of trust their buddies better. Sure, that's fine. But the coach there, who's an expert, this is what he
does. Yeah, Pubidou does this. Everywhere he goes, he just finds success. Whether it's here, whether it's USA, wherever it was, whether it's Nepal, wherever, he's been unbelievable. There's just been no arguments about that. So it's mind-boggling how he just keeps – I'm sure he's thinking about this. How does he always – find himself in these situations? If I'm someone in the top ranks of the world, then I'm looking at hiring an assistant or maybe looking at a head coach or something like that. This is a guy you have to look at because he's so very good at doing so much with so little. I think that's what Pubidou does so well. I think better than a lot of associate coaches is that he understands he's going into a system where there isn't a lot for him to do. In the sense of there isn't a lot of money. He's got to get creative, and he's so creative, and then it works, and he just ends up back in these situations. You're right. It's very political. It's very much there's money to be made, and now it's egotistical. I want the credit for it. Now it's my money being roped in. Now there's resources, and I can have a say. And versus, I think Pubidou is, in an egotistical world, feels like a guy who's willing to put his ego down and say, look, this might not be the way I want to coach, but this is the way I have to coach in this country. This is the way it has to run because this is just the system we have in place. And this is the best way for us to get to the highest level. I'm frustrated for that guy. And I'm sure he's just in there just livid about the situation this close to a World Cup.
As I mentioned before, the minimum for selectors was that they had to at least play first-class cricket. There's one of the selectors... it's not listed as having played any first-class matches. I'm going to look into that even more. But you know, how many times have we seen, at least in the USA, how many times have we seen the Constitution apparently look like it was just completely spat on? And they get away with it. I think that this is the type of thing that we don't want to see in cricket here in North America. Obviously, it happens. It seems to happen way too often. People are just shooting from the hip and riffing and trying to find some pretext to manipulate things when they want to. And it's just bad for cricket. And ultimately what this sort of thing does is it creates distrust for the players. The players don't trust the process. We can't get into the nitty gritty of who's selected. We can talk about that all we want to, but we're not going to. We're not. If someone gets selected and you think somebody else should have been selected instead, that's one thing. But you need to be able to trust the process. Obviously, a coach and selectors are going to have their opinions, and they're going to have to settle on coming to some common ground, some neutral spot to get a team actually picked. And we know that's going to mean that sometimes the coach doesn't always get his team. But we're talking about 4, 5, 6 different people suddenly in the team that weren't in there before. And that doesn't seem to me like a Pubidou type of... obviously, it's not a Pubidou thing. But what bothers me is that it creates distrust in the process. They've lost some of their most experienced players, too. They're losing some very experienced guys in this team. Srimantha Wijerani, Nikhil Dutta. These are two guys with some of the most experience in T20 cricket in Canada. Nikhil Dutta bats way down the order, but look at him. He smashes at a 155, 160 strike rate, batting at 8-9. Who doesn't want that? Who doesn't want that on their team? I don't know. It just it's a shame that they've removed Buhudu from these decisions. The series against USA should have never been a selection series in the first place. They've played so much cricket. It shouldn't have been that way for USA either, but they haven't played enough cricket. So it's just such a terrible shame. And that brings us to USA, our final talking point here. USA's own selection shenanigans. We're hearing that, like we said before, the team's not out, but we're hearing Usman Rafiq is out and Gajanan Singh is out and Ali Khan is in and Shayan Jahangir is in. Now, Shayan, Ali in, tons of sense. Obviously, Ali's walking right in. And Shay should have never been in question in the first place.
Yeah.
It's wild that he was in question. Usman out makes sense. We talked about that before. Great guy, great story, and just good cricketer. Just doesn't fit into the team plans. It didn't make sense to have him there anyways. And the Gajanan Singh one is the one that kind of eats at me. I didn't have him in my 11, but I had him in the team because I think if he gets a chance against Bangladesh, I think he's going to do pretty well. Give him a chance at least against Bangladesh. Now, this guy, he and Shay came into 2024 as the hottest batters in USA and internationally.
Yeah.
And both of them have had like the worst battle.
Yeah. Yeah, no, with Gudge, I think it's the big moments and it's the tough moments where he shines the best, right? When the top order hasn't worked and we need someone to come in to save the innings, I can't think of a better name than Gajanan Singh oftentimes, especially T20 cricket. Go back to that Ireland match that we won against a full member nation. We were down and pretty much out of that to begin with. Ritwik Behera was making his debut, didn't really have a good crowd early. Monica Patel out early. No one was really going. And then Gajanan Singh comes in and plays an unbelievable innings, has an unbelievable kind of that Kohli shot against Pakistan in the T20 World Cup. I think Gajanan Singh had it a year earlier in December. Phenomenal stuff that we're seeing from Gajanan Singh. So it's disappointing. He had a good minor league too. I thought he played well. Tough Eastern division where the wickets were just not conducive for batting. There was just no batting involved. And really the turning point of that minor league finals, when you think about it, was his run out. Was Nash Kinjigay running him out after facing just one ball. So those are some key things where it's like those are big moments for Gajanan Singh in tough situations, and he delivers. And I think having that kind of grit, it's still valued. Even in a T20 game, it's all about flash. It's all about being aggressive and hitting from ball one. Grit seems to be something that you can't undervalue. Virat Kohli's spot on the Indian side is determined on grit, right? It's that when things get hard, here's a guy who can dig you out of some situations. I think Gajanan Singh can provide that role. And I agree. I don't think he made my best 11, but he was definitely in my squad. And I think if he would have gotten a shot, he could have definitely competed for that 11 spot. I think Shan coming in is what I wanted. I didn't want to see Gudge go out, though, for that. I don't think that was where it should have been. I think Gudge and Shay both should have been a part of this team and given an opportunity to compete for that 11.
Yeah, and honestly, USA in this group against Pakistan, against India, Ireland even, and Canada is not going to be good enough to have a set 11 every single game. I don't think. I think that you're going to have to look at it like platooning. Okay, hey, guess what? If you look at those teams, which one of those teams has scary off-break bowlers? I don't think it's a problem going with three lefties against I think it helps you having three lefties against Ireland. We've already seen that. We had that team that we had against Ireland was loaded with lefties and they
lefties,
came
through. Yeah, all over the board.
So I say go ahead and bat three lefties against Ireland. The three would be obviously Stephen, Corey, and Gash. I'm totally all for
Harmeet that. Coming behind that too, right?
Harmeet coming behind that too. I'm totally all for that because against Canada right now, you got Nikhil Dutta out. So he's not in the team anymore. And they're bringing in Junaid Siddiqui, X-Man. And we know he's very economical. But now he's going to have, now imagine him. We saw what Steven did to him. And obviously, you know, look, he's a very economical bowler, unusually economical for a leggy. But when teams are going to load up with left arm orthodox, like Saad bin Safar and leg break bowlers, I think you may as well just bat four left, basically four lefties at that point.
And even like you, Pakistan and India, Ravindra Jadeja is playing for India. There's just no way around him being not being in that team. So he's going to be in that team at the very least. They don't really have an off spinner that's in the works and being talked about. And then for Pakistan, you should, Shadab Khan is back amongst the group. So you're going to have to deal with some of these left. There's going to be some of these left-handers bowling. And so the guys like Corey and Harmeet, Stephen, and Gudge in the mix, they can be an effective bunch. Again, do I think we have, do I like what Nitish Kumar is? I love Nitish Kumar in this team. I love Shane Jahangir in this team.
Yeah.
Do I think Gajran Singh in this Bangladesh series had an opportunity to compete and show some things? Yes, and I also don't think he was given very much opportunity to show what he could do against Canada. I don't remember him having an extensive stay in the middle.
He had, one innings. That's it. Yeah.
Yeah. Like the first innings he had, he played, one ball?
End of the game. Sort of.
Exactly. So he never really had a real opportunity to say mark his territory the way Nitish Kumar did or Monin Patel did or Anjesh Kels did. And again, those guys are going to play and going to be really good for the team. But I think, okay, if you would have known Gajran Singh is the one we're looking at, send him one down. Send him at four. Send him up the order to let him show you if he's good enough to play or not. But I think that you're judging him. I don't know what you're judging him off of right now because everything as of late has been positive. His ODI series in Zimbabwe, the qualifiers, he had 100 in that with qualifiers. His minor league, statistically, you can look at it, maybe not his best minor league, but you look at the situation of those Eastern wickets, a very good minor league with all things considered. The MVP of the Eastern Division.
That's right.
The last T20 internationals that we played domestically. Fantastic. Situationally, he's been really good in all the formats you can look at. How much are you taking Major League into account? I don't know, but I can't imagine it's that big of a priority when Aaron Jones is your vice captain and he wasn't retained. I think that they're Gajran Singh being let go. Again, you can let him go. I just don't think you gave him an opportunity to show what he can do. And I think that's probably the most frustrating part.
Yeah, if he was on the chopping block, I think he deserved a better chance than what he got.
Yeah.
And even if he's not in the team, like you said and I said, I didn't have him in my 11, you didn't have him in your 11. To me, something happens to Corey, he's in. He's the guy I'm putting it. Something happens to Corey, he's the guy I'm putting it. And not
Corey, Nitish, like those guys.
Exactly. Yeah.
Cheyenne, even, he's a guy that can fit in that middle order pretty much anywhere you want it to.
Yeah, I think I don't really like that. I'm wondering who else you take out of that squad.
Like Nisarg Patel, we talked about it. Do you need the third left arm spinner? Could you get Gajan as a bat? I think he's the better bat. And you rock with the two left arm spinners, and then you put Gajan Singh in for an extra batting option. I don't mind that option also.
Yeah, I think we both know that Peter would probably – Peter, I don't want to speak for Peter. But I'm gonna. I think Peter would probably say, "Yeah, take Aaron out of the team and keep Gajan." But Aaron's your vice captain. I don't think that he's going anywhere. And he didn't. I don't think he didn't do bad in against Canada. We didn't see the best of Aaron either. But he was a victim of a couple of good plays too. But to me, the crazy thing here is we're going into a World Cup, a T20 World Cup without a leg spinner, and we've got.
Yeah.
This is crazy. We've got Cameron Steele available to us, and he is currently the leading wicket taker in the county championship right now by 5 wickets. He leads all of county cricket in wickets right now. Cameron Steele, leg spinner, USA eligible, and he's not
X factor.
He's not going to be in the team because of their silly policy. Not only that, we also have the leading wicket taker from the Sheffield Shield in Australia, Cam Gannon, who was also the domestic player of the year in Major League Cricket for Seattle. And he's not in the team. We have a year, the weirdest year ever, where the two best first-class setups in the world, where Americans, people qualified as Americans, are leading in wickets, and they're not in our team. I look at you right now, you are writhing right now, and you are absolutely writhing right there.
Oh, man. Nate, I'll tell you a funny story to start. Right now, for everyone, it's an audio format, but I have my left forearm over my forehead and my eyes, and my right hand kind of connected.
It's the dab of
a John Boy video. It's a dab of pain, but it's from a John Boy video. It's a Louisville John Boy video where he's breaking down the Louisville pitcher at the end. And my friend from UNC is actually in that John Boy video getting shouted out by John Boy, where she's stressed and she's doing that exact pose, the dab of pain, for those of you who want to go watch that. But it's frustrating because you need a leg spin, right? You need a leg spin. It's the hottest commodity in the shortest form of the game. Without leg spin, you really don't win. But that's the name of the game. If you don't have a true leg spinner, you don't really win competitions. And not only do we have options, right? You have Zia Shahzad, you have Yasin Muhammad, and you talked about Yasir has been part of the system and setup. Zia's had a pretty good year domestically. But not only do you have those two options in the States, but you have the best bowler in the county setup in Cameron Steele, wickets-wise. The highest wicket taker in the county setup, ready at your disposal. And you say, nah, we're good.
Yeah.
Nah, we're good? I think there's a lot of countries in the world that are taking Cameron Steele part of their squad. And then yeah. Cam Gannon, the same way, he is the Bart King domestic player of the year for Major League Cricket. He has expressed that he wanted to play for USA. He said on the podium, me and you were there when he said, I would love to play for the USA in the upcoming World Cup. He said it plain as day, and he's not part of this team. And
yep.
We could use an extra third pacer.
Sure.
Because he gives you not a lot with the bat, but a little bit. I think he gives you another flavor of bowling. And absolutely. Again, if he's leading wickets in Sheffield, that's something as well. And I think he's a better – again, I love Jesse Singh. I think he's a phenomenal individual. But I think he brings you a little bit more in terms of that depth role than maybe Jesse Singh does. And I think Jesse Singh can live in your reserves. I think that you could never hurt having that extra option as a pace bowler.
Yeah.
I think those are two really big misses. You don't have a leg spinner. I think the two biggest things in terms of X factors for T20 cricket are leg spinners and that all-rounding pace, that third pacer, that bats, or that all-rounding pace bowler. They change setups. So that's why India, even after Hardik Pandya has had a struggling recovery, is going to play Hardik Pandya in their 11 because they know he's the key to their World Cup, right? That's why these teams are going to look for those types of pieces. And that's why the West Indies are always such a dangerous T20 team, because they always have those pacers that can come in with the bat and give you a lot. Or Romario Shepherd's going to go for a pretty penny because of that. Trey Russ for a long time because of that. You have an opportunity to bring a couple guys like those in, and you don't. That's frustrating, right? We can talk about, like this guy or that guy, but you have, these are two clear-cut options, and you don't even look at it. Like with the Gudge thing, you did give Gudge an opportunity to show you why you shouldn't pick him. You didn't even give these guys an opportunity to show you why you shouldn't pick him. You just did pick.
Yeah. Yeah, it's bananas. It doesn't make any sense. It's just silly. Yeah, it's just so silly. Of course Cameron Steele's going to go out and lead the freaking county championship in wickets right now. Just to highlight how stupid this is. But yeah, look, the team we're sending is good. The team that we're sending is better than any team we have sent in the past. It is the best team, I think, that I've seen in USA cricket. It's a good-looking team. But it's just so frustrating that the team could be better. Like, we talked about Shadley being the third bowler right now, and Shadley's good. He's a good cricketer. This team is better if Shadley is more of a depth player, honestly. Shadley's a good cricketer. He's going to give you a lot more with the bat than Cameron Gannon is, that's for sure. But the team, I think they're better with him in a depth position. Now, that said, we're going to cheer for these guys. Of course, we are.
100%.
And we might be surprised when they announce this team. If they announce it on Wednesday like they're supposed to, we might be shocked. We might be surprised by what we see. I'm not going to hold my breath because the things that we're hearing are pretty reliable and they make sense with what we've heard so far. When that happens, Amin, we'll try to do another episode. And teams are actually announced. We'll try to do another episode. We'll follow up a little bit on this Canada shenanigans, on the USA nonsense and whatever. And in the meantime, let's hope that our women can pull it together and win a couple of games here, at least one game coming up for the rest of the week in that World Cup qualifier. And this was a fun episode. We talked about a lot of different things in this episode. We were all over the place, but thank you for joining us and listening. And thank you once again for making time.
Thank you, Nate.